Hello and welcome to episode number 9 of Frontline. This is a Safe Ministry podcast aimed at the people on the front line of Safe Ministry in the churches and organisations of the Anglican Diocese of Sydney. My name is Neil Atwood. I'm the parish consultant on the Safe Ministry team. And as usual, I'm joined by Kylie Williams, my co-worker and the training consultant on the team.
Hello.
Just a reminder, of course, that every episode has a page on safeministry.org.au, which has a very brief summary of the content, has any links that we reference in the episode, and a link to play that episode, and actually a comment section, which, interestingly, no one seems to use. But you can leave your feedback and suggestions there. You can find those pages by heading to safeministry.org.au/frontline. And of course, you can also subscribe to the podcast in your favourite podcast app. Now, we're very conscious it's been a long time between frontline drinks, but we are back and hopefully we'll be a little more regular in the second half of the year. Although it's disturbing to think that we are nearly in the second half of the year. Kylie, what have you been up to since episode 8, which was way back in early February?
Yeah, that feels a long time of year, and yet it also feels like yesterday, Neil, that we were doing that episode. So, for the first part of this year, I've been working on making sure that we get the new courses out. So face-to-face ministry has started back up again this year. So managing the face-to-face training, also building the new online courses that will be available imminently. We are working very hard at getting that out and ready for people. I took a short break with my family just before Easter, and then after I returned, I was just making sure that the online system kept plugging away while you went and took a well-earned break for most of the month of May. Of course, there was an Archbishop's election in the midst of that as well.
Yes, there was indeed. There was indeed.
Mm. So what have you been up to, Neil?
Yeah, well, all of those things. Well, not all those things. Slightly different things, of course. But I guess one of the big changes for me is over the last 12 months how my role has shifted slightly. Because back at the end of 2019, I was appointed Archdeacon of the Western Region. Then we had a new bishop for the Western Region who I work very closely with, and Gary does work very differently to Ivan. But I guess that job has increased quite significantly. So it's managing that balance between the work with the PSU, the work in the region. But this year also a few health challenges for me, which just sort of took energy levels down quite a notch. And that was another reason why I think a front line was put on the back burner for a little while. Then, of course, as you said, there was the Archbishop's Election Synod, and prior to that, only for a day, but there was a regular synod, which I'm part of, and it just seems like the time just disappeared. But there we go.
Yeah, things are, it's just the nature of the time, isn't it? For the last 18 months, we've just been in constant change and flux and kind of living day to day and yet trying to plan things as well. So it's all challenging, but it's good to be back here.
It is indeed. Well, moving on to our content for this podcast, and really this is just a bit of a mishmash of things, a bit of a mashup of subjects that I've been aware of, that people have been raising in the Safe Ministry Reps Facebook group or through email. So this is really just a little bit of a catch up on some of those matters. And one of the first things, I guess this hails back a little bit to AGM season in February and March, but there were a few questions raised about Safe Ministry Reps and parish councils. And of course, the relevant ordinance does say that Safe Ministry Reps should make a report to their parish council once a year. And there is even a sort of a template for that purpose. But I think, judging by the questions I was getting, SAFE ministry reps weren't quite sure sometimes what to include in that report. And there was also a question about when should that report happen. Now, Kylie, you were a SAFE ministry rep for quite a while in your church. How did you manage that?
Yes, I was for a little while. And it was a good experience for me because it means that you get to actually see what it's like being in the day-to-day workings of church life, and, you know, liaising with leaders, liaising with your senior minister, and the opportunity to speak to parish council as well. We had a standing date generally in the December parish council meeting that I would come and give a report to parish council. I would hijack quite a bit of their parish council session, but they would ask me questions. I would read my report and I would offer suggestions on things that we could do better or differently. They would ask why or how that could happen, and then that could go on their agendas for future times. That I don't think they would have prevented me from going to other meetings as well, but I would have regular meetings with my senior minister at least once a term where we would sit down and talk about things, how things were going, where leaders were at with their training and other bits and pieces. So there was more reporting than just reporting to parish council. And I had a great rapport and a great relationship with my, and still do, with my senior minister. He was very open to things. Doesn't mean they always took on board everything that I said and made changes on the basis of that, which is fine. But I felt that there was an openness there to be listening to what was happening, you know, in the safety of our ministries and how we could make that happen better. And part of that was also the recording of information. We changed to Elvanto at one stage in the midst of my time as SAFE ministry rep. And so I was able to set up how we would capture information and create reports based on that to make sure that we were on the front foot with keeping up with leaders and their training. There was no SAFE ministry check at the time, but they're working with Children Check as well. And I know that the current SAFE ministry rep is very thankful for that system. He's very good with computers, so he's been quite capable at taking that further now with other things to do with the SAFE ministry check. And I know that he comes and speaks to me occasionally and asks me questions, or I just check in with him and see how things are going as well.
Wow, that's pretty comprehensive, but good to hear. I guess what I often say to people, to SAFE ministry reps who contact me with questions around this is you know, look, for sure do your annual report as the role requires, but I've sort of encouraged them to maybe have a conversation with the senior minister about maybe fronting up more often than that, and give sort of less formal sort of running reports or submit things for parish council agenda, because you know, there just seems to be a good opportunity to actually help keep SAFE ministry matters really in the fore of the minds of the people who are making, you know, a lot of the decisions in our churches.
And I think that's important too, because there would be things that I would put in my annual report that would have been more policy related things. But if I felt that anything was urgent and needed action now, and our wardens were very good with managing risks, you know, on the, making sure that they keep up with all those sorts of things as well. But if I felt that there was something that actually this needed to be actioned now, this is an issue now and I can't wait till the December report, I wouldn't have had any hesitancy in going and speaking to them about that.
Yeah, good. Excellent. I think that's an encouragement for people. So hopefully SAFE ministry reps listening to this, don't be afraid to take things to your parish council. Don't be afraid to ask for for more time, or at least to be able to submit something written for parish council to consider. I think that's all really positive. The other matters, a couple of other simple matters that, again, have come up recently in questions to me, revolve around the Safe Ministry Check. And look, I have to say, in general, that seems to be going pretty smoothly. I've been really impressed by churches, by ministers, by Safe Ministry reps who've really obviously put the hard yards in to get this working for their in their churches. Two questions that I get fairly regularly around that are, prior to the Safe Ministry Check, we had, of course, a document that was on the Safe Ministry website that was basically called the Under 18-Year-Old Declaration. And that was something we encouraged ministry teams to use for their junior leaders. And it was a simple declaration relating to that the junior leader would say would declare that they haven't ever been charged with any offence involving abuse to a child or anything around that area. And
the parents would co-sign that too.
And exactly, the parents would co-sign that. And really, what that is, that's morphed into the Safe Ministry Check for under 18s, or for 13 to 17 year olds, to be more accurate. And that's a little more comprehensive document, but again, it is countersigned by a parent or guardian. And so that is the document that junior leaders need to do as part of their trifecta of safe ministry matters. Except it's not a trifecta for them, of course. It's only two things. It's safe ministry training and that safe ministry check. They of course, can't obtain a working with children check yet. So there's that. And then the other question I've had is there's been a little bit of confusion around clergy and the safe ministry check. Just to cut to the chase about that is for licensed clergy in our churches or for authorised lay ministers in our churches, the local church does not have to worry about a safe ministry check for them. They do a safe ministry check, and it's a much more comprehensive one than the volunteers do. But that is entirely managed by the diocese. That's managed by the regional bishop's office and the registry, and so things are taken care of in that way. And so there's really nothing for safe ministry reps to do for those people in their churches. So on to the area that I thought we'd spend a little bit more time on today. And that is thinking about junior leaders. Someone raised this on the Safe Ministry Reps Facebook group, and I think it's a helpful one to look at, because there's been quite a few changes in the last 12 months in the way that we manage junior leaders. They, of course, have come under the Safe Ministry Check system, as I've just sort of hinted at. And the other big difference in the last 12 months is that under the Safe Ministry to Children Ordinance 2020, junior leaders, like adult leaders, have to do safe ministry training before they can start working with children. So, of course, that has really thrown that into the mix in a significant way for some churches. So we thought we would just talk about what's best practice to do with managing junior leaders and a little bit of going over exactly how the safe ministry training system works for that category of people. So here's a quick sketch of how that works, and again, some of the changes that the Safe Ministry to Children Ordinance has brought to junior leaders.
Yeah, so anybody who's done their safe ministry training will know that we define vulnerable people in basically two categories. Children in general are of themselves a vulnerable people category because of their lack of age and size and wisdom and experience and their dependence on people. So really junior leaders are kind of in a very unique position in that they are looking to be in a leadership position whilst being a vulnerable person. Now they're not the only people that would be in that position. We also know that adults can be vulnerable, and there are vulnerable adults who are in leadership positions as well. So we can manage that, and those two things can work together. But it's important to remember that the junior leaders are very much a vulnerable person themselves. And so because of that, their training, we have felt all along, really needs to be conducted within a different framework to that of the adults. Now, the junior online course, the junior safe industry training is only available online. And so we worked really hard at thinking, how can we make sure that these vulnerable, this category of vulnerable person who's looking to be a leader can be cared for and mentored and challenged to think about what it means to be a leader and how to do that well within that that dynamic of online training. And so we made sure that the local church has a real oversight in the training, so that there's this pastoral context that the junior leaders are living in and serving within in their churches. So Neil, maybe you want to explain a little bit about how the actual, you know, getting into the system works for the junior leaders.
Yeah, sure. Look, it sounds complicated when you write it all out, but really it's not that hard. It's a fairly logical thing, given that what you just said about the nature of that age group, that they will need parental permission to do the training. And also the senior minister of the church needs to grant permission. And so documents to that end need to be completed, and then they need to be stored in the church's safe ministry records. Those documents do need to be obtained for each new junior leader when they are beginning the course, before they begin the course, and then retained by the church. And the declaration that a church submits to the PSU, the online declaration, indicates that the person completing that understands that's their responsibility. And really the only person who really should be completing those online declaration forms is the training mentor. Kylie, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, the training mentor is key in this. Now, it could be a parent who is looking to, they don't necessarily need to be in a leadership position themselves, but they're a wise person, an older person who can really help assist junior leaders in understanding what it means to be a leader. It could also be, and what we often find is, it's one of the key leaders in the church. It could be the youth minister, the children's minister. It could be a senior leader in the children's or youth ministry. It's often somebody who has a supervisory type role over those junior leaders in their ministry role. And what the training mentor does is that they keep track of the junior leader's progress in the course. So they actually have, and Neil, you'll explain this in a moment, but they actually have the ability to enroll the junior leaders, to see how the junior leaders are tracking in their progress. They also receive emails to confirm that the junior leader has started their training. They also receive emails to confirm that the junior leader is at a particular point in their training, because the junior leaders, whilst they don't go into the same detail in terms of what is abuse, we still do raise that to a certain extent in the training. And so it's important that the training mentor is made aware that the junior leader is at this point. You know, it's as pastorally caring leaders, we want to make sure that we take the time to say, hey, are you okay? You know, you've done some reading on some things that can be tricky. And, you know, if a junior leader is somebody who's experienced abuse or harm in the past, that could be quite triggering for them. So it's important that training mentors are kept up to speed with where the junior leader is at, especially if they're doing things at their own pace, in their own time, and then they're going to meet with their training mentor later, because that is part of the role of the training mentor as well.
It's really an important role, and really a very significant role, I think, in helping to mould these young leaders. And as you mentioned, really since almost a year ago, the training mentor has actually been given a lot more control and access to the training for junior leaders in their church. So the way that works at the moment is, once the junior leader declaration form is submitted by the training mentor, that person is then set up as a group leader for their church in our learning management system. And that means, as Kylie just mentioned, that then the training mentor has complete control on enrolling the junior leaders from their church. So long as those junior leaders have created their account in the website, then the training mentor can enroll them. And once they've done that, the training mentors can track progress of each junior leader through the course. They can see how fast they're doing it or how slow they're doing it. Probably more of the latter than the former, I suspect. As you mentioned, Kylie, they are emailed when junior leaders hit key points in the training. They need to be happy that each junior leader is across the material and has coped well with the course when they meet with them before giving them a code for them to actually access the last topic and finish the course and gain their certificate. It's a really significant role. I think it's a really great opportunity for churches to really do a lot of moulding of the lives of those young people. I tell you one thing.
Neil, it's also important to say that for training mentors, once they're set up as a training mentor, they can enrol junior leaders at any point. So yep. They may become a training mentor today because they've got junior leaders that they want to train, you know, this week or in the next few weeks. And that's fine. But then in 6 months' time, they may have another bunch of junior leaders and they don't need to come back to us and ask us anything. No. They just enrol those new junior leaders. So that's the right. Declaration makes you a training mentor, you know, in perpetuity, essentially, until, yep. You know, we might get a request to take them out of the system. They may move churches or things like that.
Yeah. Yep, no, absolutely right. The training mentor also gets emailed a copy of each junior leader's certificate. Now, that's just really a backup, but we do want to say, please do follow up about their certificates to make sure it's passed on to SAFE ministry reps. And I can tell you one of the common issues is that we have had a significant number of junior leaders not actually finish the course. So they have their meeting with the training mentor. The training mentor gives them a code they need, which is, I guess, similar in function to the post-webinar code that that adult volunteers doing refresher or essentials get. But they just don't get to log in and finish that last topic and get their certificate. And just finding a whole bunch now who've realised that they've allowed their six-month enrolment period to expire, which, of course, deletes all the course progress, and that means they actually need to go in and do the whole thing again from the beginning. Mm-hmm. We know that working with teenagers is sometimes challenging, shall we say, in terms of making sure they keep up to doing things in a timely way. But I guess it's just underscores the importance of trying to stay on top of their progress in the course.
Mm. And of course, if anybody's having difficulty or issues, some junior leaders have said, "I've tried to log back in and I couldn't for whatever reason." Putting in a support ticket is always the best way to go. We can yep. check that if the system's working. We can offer suggestions on how to manage that. But definitely doing that before the six-month enrollment period expires is so much easier than saying, "I'm really sorry, your course has now expired and you have to start again."
Yep, dead right. That's always an unpleasant email to write. Kylie, tell us a bit more about sort of best practice around working with this sort of age group that junior leaders fall into.
Yeah, so it's really, I mean, there's some things that we can do the same as we do for adults, and there's some things that we did differently because they are a vulnerable people category. But screening is always a good thing to do before any leadership role is considered for any person. And some of you may say, "And how do I do that for a 13 or a 14 or a 15-year-old? You know, with adults, we may go to another adult that they suggest or a previous employer. But what do we do with teenagers? And I always say the parents is a really good place to start. What their attitude is like to their parents, what their attitude is like around the home in terms of, you know, doing chores, contributing to the family. These are all really helpful bits and pieces of information to find out about what that person is like in general. They can look wonderful on paper, but it's good to have those conversations with people who really know them, you know, away from perhaps the veneer of what they want to project to the rest of the world. Don't go scrolling through their Instagram feed. That's not going to give you an understanding of what they're like at all. There is also the Safe Ministry Check that you mentioned earlier, Neil, and that is a requirement of the diocese before they serve, just like any children's ministry leader. So that's also another screening process that you can go through with them. And the pledge that's in that is the one that's in the training. So those two things kind of work together. You know, you're actually asking them to read and sign up on things that are that shouldn't be new to them, whether they're doing one or the other. Those two things go together. Trying to build the junior leader training into a broader leadership training framework is really probably a good starting point for them as leaders as well, because we always want leaders to think of themselves as, you know, always able to learn, always able to grow, always able to know something new. None of us knows everything. And so getting them starting thinking along those lines, understanding that, you know, training and learning is a part of leadership, is a good place to go. So Safe Ministry training should be part of a broader aspect of training. And I know that YouthWorks would be a great resource for that if anybody wanted to find out more. And just in terms of the Safe Ministry training, some people find that they do there's different ways that you can do that. Some churches have junior leaders do all the self-paced things on their own over a period of time. They give them X number of weeks to say, I've enrolled you. I want to meet with you, let's say in 3 Sundays' time, just before church. So you make sure that you get in and you do that. And because you can track their progress, you can see how they're going and say, hey, are you going to be finished by that time? Because we need to sit down and have that chat and make sure that you're ready to complete your training and then be involved in, you know, a holiday club or, you know, your regular kids ministry weekly activities or whatever. That, I think, particularly works well for older junior leaders who can manage their time, who may have other things on as well, and so it's difficult to get them all together. So you get them to do things as they can, but give them a deadline to work towards. For others, they like to work through the training as a group, where each junior leader has a device there in front of them, but they're all working together through it on a particular day at a particular time. And then when they've all got to that final topic together, then they all sit down and have that conversation together with their training mentor. And that's probably a good way to go for younger junior leaders who may need a little bit more guidance with things. You can do it a bit more conversationally as they go and talk with them about things. Help them to understand some of the concepts that are coming up. And that would make your discussion time perhaps a little bit shorter at the end as well. So do what works for your situation. As long as each leader is completing their own course, it really makes no difference to us the way that you work it. It's just use the flexibility that's built into the training there. And also important to remember, finally, that junior leaders, anyone who's under 18 years, shouldn't be included in supervision ratios when we're looking at, you know, how many leaders have we got in this ministry, how many kids, and trying to keep our supervision ratios going there. They're a great asset to have. They're an extra pair of eyes and ears and hands, but they can't be left alone with kids. They can't be included in supervision ratios.
Yep, indeed. Thanks, Kylie. That's all really helpful. Just one final reflection on the Junior Leaders course. I might be wrong, but as far as I know, we're the only denomination diocese that I'm aware of in the country that has a course like this for that age group that is specifically written for them and has this framework of the training mentor, and so forth, and the support of their own church around it. And I think we should be pretty happy about that. I think that's an exciting move that I don't think many other denominations, many other Anglican dioceses, certainly in Australia, maybe even further afield than that, have actually come to this point of developing it. So I get excited as I see more and more churches getting on board, putting their young teens leaders through it, as an old ex-youth worker, I just love the idea of these kids being trained, being encouraged in really good ministry and leadership practices, because that's what helps to build adult leaders as they come to that stage. So very good.
Absolutely.
Well, that is about it for episode number 9. Kylie, tell us how people can contact us.
Well, you can go to the website safeministry.org.au and click on the contact button there and fill out the form on the contact page. You can send an email to info@safeministry.org.au, or of course you can leave a comment on the Frontline episode page.
Yeah, that'd be a novelty.
Good.
We're going to catch you next time for episode number 10, double digits. Yay!
Yay!